This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It is Wyman and Bob right here on your home for the Mariners playoff run. And a man who I know is excited, a man who I know is just chomping at the bit, cannot wait to talk about this Mariner team because he has been invested like no other. He's a man who comes in and educates us every week. He talks us off the ledge. He tells us why things happen the way they do. He is the one, the only, Paul Moyer, who joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hello, Paul.
I am not worthy. This is the Mariners. We are all humbled and cannot wait for tomorrow. But thank you. Glad to be here.
I can't tell you how many eye rolls I just got from Dave as I was going through that.
I was going to say, maybe there could be a special dispensation somehow for I can make it on to, just for the playoffs, make it onto the group chat. What do you think?
Dave, I've been texting you. So I will text them, and I'll say, hey, I'm about to text Dave, and they give me the okay, and then I text you. So it's kind of like you're a part of it, but you're not.
I like how that finished. But you're not.
It's kind okay, of, you're fine. Sort of part of it, Dave, but not really.
I'll tell you what, I don't want to break up your mojo of what's going on right now.
And I don't want to break up yours. And I feel bad for you tomorrow that you're going to have to get on a bus at 3:45 where the game's probably not going to be over and bus to your nice little chartered plane ride. Here's what I'm pretty sure, Dave. All the Seahawks are fired up about the Mariners. I'll bet you they got some TV on the bus or something. They're not going to just take off without watching that game. So I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Paul, what was your reaction? I assume you were parked in front of a TV the night they clinched. Cal Raleigh hits that movie-style home run, bottom of the ninth, two outs, full count, pitch hitter, comes up, injured thumb, all of it, and bangs one off the windows of the Hit It Here Cafe. I mean, I was in the stands. It was beyond surreal. But what was your response?
Well, going into the game, because I knew we were going to clinch eventually, I was hoping they'd lose that night because I had tickets for Saturday and I wanted to be there when they clinched, right? And thank
selfish,
you, Dave,
for
unbelievable tickets. I want to thank Kyle and everybody. That was really nice. But, man, I tell you what, everybody's had the same emotion, I'm sure. I mean, I pretty much cried when Cal hit that home run because it was such a script that was written, or it almost can't be written, but – it's a dream. It's a dream for fans. It's a dream for Cal Raleigh. It's a guy that everybody loves. I mean, fans love him. The organization loves him. The players love him. So for him to do it, I don't know. There probably wasn't a jealous bone on anybody on that team. And then just, you know, the whole reaction, him going around. To me, Cal's reaction, the emotion came out for everybody on what that moment meant. And just watching him round the bases and saying, oh, my God, I can't believe it. And Dave Sims had, a great line. He said they were showing the replay a few days later of Cal when he was coming up to bat and showing when he hit that home run. And he said, that's a man that will never have to buy a beer again in this town. And that is so true. I mean, he's a folk hero now. Yes, it was – unbelievable the way it ended, and it's something that we'll remember. That'll be something that, if you're a fan, you'll remember where you were on that day.
Well, Paul, maybe I'll let you sit on this question for a second, but Bob and I were talking about who's going to be the X factor in this series, and you know, it can't be somebody that's chalk, you know, like Haniger or, you know, Robbie Ray or anything like that, but just, you know, maybe I know Bob picked Kelnick. I picked JP Crawford just because he would be chalk, but he's not having, you know, that kind of a year this year. But anybody you think that the way they've been playing, what you've seen, that you think could really put this team over the top, that's kind of a, you know, a lesser known player?
Well, I think it's Kelnick for me too. And actually in our text, we were talking about that because
I wouldn't know.
I thought I forwarded it to you, but maybe not. He's the one guy that it could be the X factor, right? I mean, we know the whole story of him, you know, being demoted, coming back up. To me, there shouldn't be a whole lot of pressure on him, and he does look better. He looks more confident, and he looks more in control of the swing. It's not perfect yet, but he has that kind of power and ability to hit things in the gap and play good defense. That could be the X factor. Because when I'm looking at this team, and while Toronto certainly, I mean, you look at Springer and Bichette and Guerrero and Kirk and Chapman and Hernandez. I mean, you know, five of those guys have hit, what, 25 home runs or 24 home runs or more. I look at our team and I go, all right, all three outfielders can hurt you. They can hurt you with that. I mean, it'll be Kelenic and obviously Julio and Haniger, our corner guys with France and Suarez. And then you have Cal as well, throwing our starting pitching and bullpen. I think it's a really intriguing matchup. And, you know, their pitcher, Manoah, no question he's gifted. I mean, you know, a whip under one in this day and age is really hard to do. But it's his first playoff game ever at home with all the pressure. I don't know, man. I kind of like my chances. So I think it's just going to be fun. And hopefully Kelenic is that guy. But I don't care. It can be anybody. Just be the hero.
Yeah, to get through them would be amazing, because obviously that would mean you'd have some home playoff games here. And it would be against the most hated team in baseball, the Astros. Can you imagine, Paul, what – and this is a city – Dave and I were talking about this in the last segment, in that this city has taken such an immense amount of pride in the volume that they create, whether we're talking the Sonics all the way back in the Coliseum days to the Key Arena days, the Seahawks back when you were playing and Dave was playing in the Dome all the way to now in Lumen Field, whether it's the Mariners in the Dome and now at T-Mobile. I mean, it's just Husky Stadium. It's just a loud city, and it's a source of pride. Can you – having been there the night they clinched and hearing it there, I can't even imagine what that volume and intensity would be like at T-Mobile Park with the hated Astros in town.
Well, we can go back to 95 and get a sense of it. You know, that first time, and, you know, I was there with the game when Randy Johnson, they beat the Angels to get that wild card spot. That was pretty impressive. And it was crazy, that whole series. So to me, it would be similar, maybe more, you know, because, you know, 21 years of this has been something. And the other thing is, God, people just love this team. It's just, there's just not a bad guy on this team. You know, I mean, I'd bring them over to dinner for anytime. I mean, they're just good guys. And here's what's interesting to me, too. I just happened to be looking up Toronto tickets available. Boy, there's a lot of tickets available. Now, they may be sold and it's on the secondary market and stuff. But you can get 100 level pretty good seats right now for about $130 there. And you can get in for $55. There's a ton of seats for sale out there. So they're going to have a massive home field advantage, and it's loud in there and all that stuff. And it's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. But that to me, so, you know, they're maybe a little complacent. It wouldn't be complacent when we get back here and we get to host a couple games against Houston.
Yeah, and then, you know, what, the Mariners were 5-2 this year. Now, they have not faced this team since they changed their GM or their manager, right? Until it was John, and it's John Schneider now is the guy's name. But, yeah, I wonder how much of a difference that made, because it did seem like they had a ton of offense and they were, like, losing series to the Kansas City Royals, who they – didn't even have a catcher because of all the COVID restrictions and everything, and then the Mariners sweep them. So how big of a difference do you think that coaching means in baseball? Because Scott Servais sure has done a really good job with this team, and I feel like, you know, them coming together, and like you said, there's not a bad guy in the group. They all are supporting each other. You know, it seems like Servais has played a pretty big role.
Well, yeah, the first one with Toronto, you know, we played all seven games in the first half of the season versus them. So, you know, we haven't seen them for a while. Both teams are different from when we did play them. You know, obviously they let their manager go and brought in Schneider because the expectations. I mean, they were expected to be a World Series contending team. And obviously it played out for them. As far as Scott Service, man, I can't imagine a better manager for this team. And what's remarkable about it, and you guys have probably talked about it, I remember when we were 29-39, and I thought they were going to make a change that Monday on Scott Service. I wouldn't have been surprised because, you know, we were in a massive slump. And so, again, to me, it just for him to be the leader he is and then to still see that leadership and the process and the players still were buying into it says so much, both from a top-down organization and then what Service brings to the table, because we've got a chance to really see what he is. He definitely pulls the right levers. You know, the amount of one-run games, it's remarkable. You give him a good bullpen, he knows how to work it. And how many times do we question his decisions, even though they're right? A lot. But yeah, this has been remarkable, and he's going to go down as one of the great ones for the Mariners of all time.
All right, before we talk Seahawks with you, what's your feeling about this series? Do you feel like they're going to get through Toronto and they're going to be taking on the Astros?
Well, so I did a 1 through 10, what's my confidence level? And you know, I'm about a 6, and I think that's the right way to go into this. And that, look, I'm confident that we're going to find a way to win. Playoff baseball is exactly the way the Mariners play throughout the regular season. You know, it's about playing it tight. You know, you get it to the 7th, 8th, 9th inning, turned over to the bullpen, you hit some home runs when you need to. So my confidence level is 6, but if we win the opener, which I think we're going to, my confidence level goes up to 8+. At that point. But the only reason why it's at a 6 right now is they have completely stacked the odds against anybody who's not seeded higher. To play all the road games, to me, it's ridiculous. Why didn't they start the first game in Seattle and then the next two in Toronto? They could have done that. A one-day travel, easy breezy. But to stack it, you got to go win 2 out of 3 on the road. That's hard enough during the regular season. But I think we're going to find a way. That's why my confidence level is above a 5.
All right, Paul, since Bob mentioned it, we'll transition. What's your confidence level of the Seahawks defense?
I'm better than I was on Sunday by a long shot.
So you've been sitting around for like 4 days looking at film, right?
My back's been an issue, so I've been laid up for a few days. And the nice thing about being laid up and your back, you don't sleep that great. What else would I want to do but watch the Seahawks at middle of the night? I've watched them quite a bit on this because I've had a hard time putting my finger on what's the issue. Because to me, 2 years ago, it was a bit of a talent issue. You know, I saw some of our older guys. They were not as good as they used to be. At corner, it wasn't quite there. We were bringing in some pieces, trying to make it all work. And they did. They end up manufacturing a better season a couple of years defensively. This one, I couldn't put my finger on. I go, is it talent? Is it play? I mean, is it the scheme? Is it just we're getting – I didn't know. So I went back through it, and I feel way better about it, man. There are so many teachable, correctable things here. And again, I'm not going to try and make this super rosy. We've got to do it. We have talent. We have talent across the board. We got to keep playing better at every position. The scheme, I actually like our scheme. We just got to play the scheme better. The big plays are coming off of guys just not doing their job. And it's frustrating to watch. But if you go and look at that last game, I'm just going to go through a couple drives for you. First drive, they're 3 and out, but we fumble the punt return.
Right.
And so they end up scoring a touchdown. The next drive, they go 3 and out, but they run a fake punt. And it was a great throw catch. I got to give it to them. They end up kicking a field goal because of that. I'm fine. The next one, we cause a fumble. The next drive, it's their last drive of the half. And they've got, at this point, about 110 yards of offense. We got him 2nd and 23, backed up, and we don't play it right when he breaks the pocket. That never should have been a first down. They get 28 yards on that. They dink and dunk their way down. Then we make another bad play when they're in field goal range. We should have just said, fine, you can have the field goal. Let's not give up a touchdown. But overall, in the first half, we play pretty well. Interception, the first drive, first play, the second half, 6 plays. We make them punt. They only get 4 yards on their next drive. So we now have 5, 6 drives They've done nothing. They've really done nothing. Then the big plays hit us. It's they get the 51-yard touchdown. They run a trap. Jordan Brooks needed to come over the top on that. He didn't play it well. We miss a tackle. Touchdown. Next one, the worst play I've seen in a long time, the 81-yarder. It's first and 20. It should have been a 7-yard play. So again, these are all correctable things. The next one, we've got them third and 10. We drop an interception. It comes up fourth and 10. We got a rookie mistake because we're playing two-man. He can't let them inside. He lets them inside. They make the play. They go down and score a touchdown. The only two drives where I said we did not play well was the last drive of the first half and the last drive of the game. Everything else in between were big plays that, to me, were correctable, teachable moments. So I'm actually much more optimistic about our defense. The talent's there. I see it. We got to get better as players, though. And I think the scheme's fine. It's not like people are just manhandling, gashing us with everything that we can't stop. We just got to quit busting and make plays, make tackles. And I really think we'll get better from it. I'm not saying we're going to be a top 10 defense, but we're going to be much improved statistically than where we are today.
Paul, let me ask you what you've seen out of two specific individuals, one being Daryl Taylor, because I think we all came into the season with a lot of expectation. He showed a ton of promise in what was, you know, technically not his rookie year last year, but the first year he got on the field, and he looked like, oh man, once this guy has a few games under his belt and has some seasoning, what's he going to be? So far, I've been disappointed. And then the other guy that everybody loves to beat Dave up about, Cody Barton, I'm just curious what you've seen from him.
Well, for Daryl Taylor, you know, his snaps got limited last week. I mean, they put it more just in third down situations, and that skill level is there. He's just got to learn to become a better football player and, you know, how to seal the edges. If there's a trap, do I spill it? Do I squeeze it? I mean, there's just a lot that goes into football. He's going to be a good player, but right now I think there's other guys that are better against the run. And so until he becomes more consistent on that, he's going to be more of a pass rushing specialist for us. He's a threat. I mean, again, watch him come off the edge. He gets double teamed a lot when he comes off the edge. So again, he's got to get better. Disappointment, and his playing time has gone down because of it. Cody, I thought Cody was going to have a horrible game last week. That was my eyes after Sunday. But then I went and watched the game again and really watched it. He had two really bad plays. That 81-yarder was a bad play. Actually, I'm going to say just two bad plays. There was I think it was on him too, and it was second and 23. It may not. It may be more how they're coaching things when a quarterback gets outside the pocket. But my old days, we would have pushed on that three levels when a quarterback gets outside the pocket. And so they end up getting a 28-yarder on that. That was disappointing. And then that one that everybody's jumping out on is the two-point conversion. I watched that a bunch of times from the end zone. And, you know, they said, well, you know, Goff had the ball. He should have made that play. Well, that play, he faked a handoff. And the running back came up into probably more in the A-B gap. And he couldn't see the ball. And by the time he saw the ball, actually physically the ball where Goff had it, it was too late. He had already slid inside. I would like for him to be able to see the football more. You got to read your keys and find the football. But outside those three plays, he wasn't that bad. And I know people are beating him up because those plays pop. They're part of life. I mean, that's so you can't take those back. But I thought he actually played better than what people are beating him up on.
How do you explain Geno Smith, Paul? Because we were talking today during the huddle, and he was saying something about, or somebody asked Pete, I think, where can he improve, or Geno said it or something like that. But I'm like, where can he? I mean, if you look at his stats right now, there's not much improvement required. But, you know, I'm trying to go back to San Francisco. He didn't play great in that game. You know, so, I mean, there's been times where, you know, I mean, his numbers are unbelievable. But I'll tell you what, in this game, and I know, you know, Detroit, not the greatest defense in the world, but he sure looked – it was more about him than it being a bad defense that he played against. I don't know. What are you seeing out of Geno? I just think it's been – he's been incredibly smooth, in command. He just sees the field really well. What stands out to you?
Man, a lot. And it is remarkable because no one saw this coming. I mean, there's no way anybody saw it coming. And partly because we're going back 10 years ago and using that as our examples of him when he was a rookie in second year. But the way the ball comes off his hand, the way he spins it is pretty impressive. I mean, he is really accurate. There was only three passes that I saw last week of the 30 or so that he threw that were outside the body of the wide receiver. Everything else hit people right in the hands or right in the chest. And those are guys on the run too. It's not like I'm running a turn route or a hook route. I mean, these are crossing routes. They're deep end routes. The only three that I remember was there was a play action early in the game. He overthrew Tyler Lockett, but the decision for him to go for that was absolutely right. He got heat. He took one right in the chest on a blitz and just barely overthrew him. He had one again, Tyler. It was a third and three, I think, and he just didn't put enough air in it. And the guy knocked it away in the corner end zone. And then there was a tip ball. But every pass, this is the part that's remarkable. I don't think he made a wrong decision. I think every decision he made was correct. Now, think about that for Shane Waldron. He's running an offense, and it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Broadcast News, where the producer's in the ear of the guy, and it's, you know, there's this dance, man. They're just on the same page. I can't imagine him going in the room and saying, yeah, Gene, that was a bad decision. I didn't see one. And there's something about the way he processes information. By the time he gets back to where his foot, you know, where he's about to plant his foot and make a throw, he's either going to his primary or he's immediately gone back two, three steps to the other side and making these decisions. And they're really good decisions, and he's really accurate. It's four games. I get it. But after these four games, and he can go back probably three games last year too, even those, he's completing over 70% of his passes. I've seen enough. I mean, he's a very accurate, good decision maker. Again, is he going to be Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or Mahomes that scrambles and flings at 60 yards all day with five touchdowns? No, but this is the best quarterback performance I've seen in a Seahawk uniform. Quarterback, not the best performance, just the quarterback, the way he ran the whole offense. It's remarkable. It really is.
Hey, Paul, we're up against the break, but part of that success, you've got to attribute to the O-line. I think they've played really well, and considering you got bookend rookies at both tackle spots, I couldn't be more impressed. Doesn't mean they're mistake-free. You know, we've seen some penalties or moments here, but considering you got two rookies at two crucial positions on that line, I think they've done a remarkable job.
Yeah, the whole offensive line has. They don't get beat quick. That doesn't mean they don't get beat at times. But Geno helps everybody. He gets rid of the ball very quickly. He feels the rush. And there's times when he will extend when it's appropriate. So it's a really good mix right now. And we've played two really good defenses this year. So, again, I don't think this is a mirage. I want to keep seeing it. But it's been a remark. I'm going to keep using remarkable because I can't come up with another better word.
Well, something else.
You're remarkable.
Something
Paul.
Else. Yeah. Outside of that, Paul's remarkable. And in fact, Hawks Live is remarkable and it's back. You can join host Michael Bumpus and the remarkable Paul Moyer tonight, starting at 7 o'clock at Bellevue Square Center Court for a live broadcast and a preview of this week's game and an in-person visit by Seahawks player Ken Walker. He'll join you live tonight. So that's tonight, 7 o'clock, Bellevue Square Center Court. You can learn more at seattlesports.com/events. Paul, as always, we appreciate it. Great stuff. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Go Ams. You know that one.
Yes, we do. Thanks,
Paul.
All right. Thanks.
I love how fired up he is about the Ams. That's awesome. All right. Coming up, which of these are going to win out? Mariners pitching or the Blue Jays offense? We're going to get into that next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Paul Moyer, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed any of that conversation, it will be available on the podcast page after the show, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. And then after they do all of that, what should they do, Lefko?
Subscribe.
Oh, look at that. He was ready, Dave.
Yeah, well, he was actually absent or just ignoring us.
A lot today. A lot of ignoring going on.
So luckily we caught him.
Yeah. But glad he was paying attention to us. That was nice of him.
Yeah.
A reminder, Aaron Goldsmith will join us at 4 o'clock. Conversation that...
I can't wait to talk to Goldie. He's my favorite.
I'm not going to let you say a word. I'm going to ask every question. Just going to say it right now. I'm going to ask every question in that interview. Okay. No, we had a chance to... Unfortunately, Dave couldn't partake. He was doing the huddle today, and Goldie had to do it in the afternoon, so we taped it. But a really fun conversation with Aaron Goldsmith. So make sure you tune into that coming up. Meanwhile, we were talking before the break just about what's going to win. Which will win out? Will it be the Mariners pitching, which has been very, very good all year? Or will it be the Toronto Blue Jays offense, which, as we've said, depending on what category you – if you want to go with the traditional just batting average on base, hits, runs, or if you want to get into the, the weighted runs created, you want to get in the weighted on base, you can get all the saber metrics you want. This is a team that's – seemingly in the top five, at least in every single category. I mean, they're in the AL. I think they're number one in a bunch. If you just compare them to everybody in Major League Baseball, they're top five, top three. This is just a loaded offense.
Yeah. Well, Son of a Gustafson said the stats were from all of Major League Baseball, ranked first in hits and average, and then third in slugging and on base percentage. So, yeah, and we'll get to the matchup later on, position by position. But their bats are just phenomenal. I mean, they really, and it's, I don't know. I'm curious to see where like the national pundits rank their bats versus the Mariner rotation. Like it might be one of the better battles that's going on in that regard, because you got Castillo, and I remember before we traded for him, somebody texted in, what about Luis Castillo? And it was kind of like when the Seahawks went and got Jadeavion Clowney.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, why don't we go get Clowney? I'm like, oh yeah, sure, yeah, let's just go get him. And they end up getting it done.
Pipe dream.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, the Castillo thing comes about, and I'm like, wow. I mean, that's what showed me that they were really, and because at that point, I think Kirby was starting to come along, we pretty much knew who we had out of everybody else, pretty much. Logan Gilbert, certainly, and Robbie Ray. Then to add him, I was like, wow, they're very serious about this, and they're getting after it. So, yeah, as far as going up against Bichette and, their catcher that eludes me right now, Christian Kirk, or is it Alejandro Kirk?
Alejandro,
yes. Yeah. Christian Kirk's the wide receiver in the NFL. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean,
the one that everybody thought was overpaid.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah, so, and then Castillo, right-handed, we're going to see him going against some right-handed hitters there and see that battle. Yeah, I think as far as the pitching rotation and the lineup, that's going to be... it's got to be one of the better battles.
Well, Jeff Passan, we played a cut from him earlier just talking about how deafening that building is. He said the Rogers Center, the best venue in all of playoff baseball, just in terms of what opposing teams will face there. But here he is talking about why, in his opinion, the Blue Jays lineup is so dangerous.
Hey, Oscar Hernandez is a guy who every year is like 40% better than league average, and nobody knows who he is. When you have three guys in Bichette and Springer and Guerrero ahead of him, when you've got Alejandro Kirk, another bat-to-ball guy, and Danny Jansen, who's a catcher who's having a great year, and, Whit Merrifield, another bat-to-ball guy. Like, I keep bringing up this bat-to-ball stuff. I do it because I think it works in the postseason. And the Jays are one of those rare teams that not only doesn't strike out or has a number of players who don't strike out, but they hit the ball hard and they hit for power too.
Yeah, that. Sorry, Bob, really quick. That was another thing. Brandon sent me, Son of Augustafson, they're seventh in home runs, and they have the seventh fewest strikeouts in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he passed it in that, talking about all the power they've got, left out Matt Chapman as well. didn't mention him. So they've got five players who have hit at least 24 home runs or more. And that's, of course, Vlad Guerrero, who I think has been pretty cold lately. I was reading something earlier that he's been struggling as of late, and maybe hopefully he won't find it here. But Guerrero, Matt Chapman, George Springer, Teoscar Hernandez, and Bo Bichette, all at least 24 home runs or more. And then Bichette also leads the American League in hits with 189. So, I mean, there's no way to spin it in any other direction. This is a formidable, to say the least, offense. Mariners absolutely have their work cut out for them. And you're right, it is the classic, you know, does great pitching shut down great hitting? You know, that's the old ad, pitching and defense is what wins, and everybody loves the long ball and all that stuff. But when faced with really dominant pitching, those teams tend to struggle. We'll see if that remains true.
I think whatever you don't have is what you would want. I mean, I think the offense is like, would you take, if you're a better, or just in general, not even this lineup, would you take, I'll take a really good starting rotation over a really good lineup of hitters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we're going to win.
That's if these pitchers perform to their capabilities, they should. They should, because I think Castillo has proven to be. I know he's had a couple of clunkers in two of his last three starts. His last start was very good, so we'll see what he does. But that's a top of the rotation guy. Robbie Ray is the Cy Young Award winner, who's been rock solid amongst league leaders in strikeouts this year. And yeah, I know he's a lefty going up against a right-handed heavy lineup, but I can't help but think, and we touched on this yesterday, that his familiarity with the mound, the building, the volume, the opposition.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that's not some sort of advantage. It doesn't mean he's just going to roll out there and doesn't have to try and they're going to win. But it's got to really lessen the blow of it, where George Kirby, if he's pitching out there, rookie, like, oh my God, what's going on? This noise and everything going on here. Or even Logan Gilbert, young guy, you know, maybe they'd be the chance they could be rattled by that in a way where Robbie Ray is like, I spent the whole season here. I know what this is about. I know what that guy's about. I know what that guy's about.
Yeah.
That's got to amount to something, I would think.
I totally agree with that, because, you know, it's funny going back against the guys that I played against with the Seahawks when I went to the Broncos. It's like they aren't any less of a player. It's just that, oh, I know that guy. You know, I've seen his failings. I've seen, you know, the things that that he can and can't do. What's the saying? Familiarity breeds contempt.
Yeah.
It's more about, like, you know, leadership and stuff like that, but still, I do think that, you know, if you're familiar with the person, you're like, you know their faults.
Yeah.
And so you know that they're not superheroes. I remember going up against some players and thinking, and you're right, with mentioning Kirby and Logan Gilbert, that, you know, they go up against guys that are like, oh man, look at this guy's OPS or whatever it is, and, you know, I can't pitch to this guy, you know, just in the back of your mind. Whereas Robbie Ray is like, oh yeah, I've seen this guy strike out a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really, I'm still curious by Scott's comment about, you know, that Ray is scheduled to start in game two, but that could change depending on what happens in game one.
Do you think he'll dive? Well, probably not. I just would love to hear if that does happen. Like, why is that? Like, divulge the plan here. What's the matchup that you like better with one pitcher over another?
Yeah, all I could, the immediate, and people could text in what they think that means. But to me, I said, all right, if Castillo goes out there as a righty and just dominates this righty lineup, maybe he wants to go throw another righty. Obviously, Robbie Ray's a lefty, so maybe Logan Gilbert would get the start in game two if he said, wow, they are not hitting righty at all. Mm-hmm. Let's go with another power righty here and see if we can catch lightning in a bottle two games in a row and get this over with. That was my first thought. Maybe there's something that's more obvious I'm missing, but that it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I don't care who's on the hill. I can't wait. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. And a reminder to make sure you stop by our Seattle Sports live broadcast at Hatback Bar and Grill. We're going to be taking you all the way up to the Mariners Wild Card pregame show at noon. So that's tomorrow with Bump and Stacy starting at 10 a.m. And then again on Saturday at 10 a.m. With a special Mariners playoff show hosted by me, along with Mike Salk and Ryan Roland Smith. The three of us will be out there. And if you haven't seen the Hatback Bar and Grill yet, you're going to want to check it out. So come on by, say hello tomorrow. Come by Saturday, we'll be out there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe Sunday, depending on what happens in these first two games. So we'll see. But there's one player who's got to perform well if the Mariners are going to win. We'll tell you who we're talking about next. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It is Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Coming up at 4 o'clock, our conversation with Aaron Goldsmith, voice of your Seattle Mariners. Man, he's had a good season. It was a great season for the Mariners. It's not over. I'm not talking past tense. But just if we're just looking at regular season, Goldie's been on fire since day one. He's so good. He's so good. He's got such great enthusiasm and just so many great calls and just a fun guy to talk baseball with.
I'm kind of torn as to whether I like it better listening to him on the radio than television, because the one thing I love about him is that he seems to take a lot of joy in sort of needling Blowers.
Oh, yeah.
And then Blowers always gives this hilarious, like, deadpan, you know, return, and then, you know, then Goldie's laughing. But whenever he tells a story, and he's like, and it's a 1-0 outside. And so then the guy, and then he, you know, does that 2-0 now, a little, you know, outside there. And he just, the way he's able to do it, it's pretty amazing, and then laugh and have a good time. So that's he's a very entertaining guy, and I'm sad that I wasn't there for it.
I do like when they call out the ump, but they don't want to be obvious about it. So Aaron will go, well, that'll go down as a strike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, I guess that's a ball. You know, when they're trying to be subtle about it, it makes me laugh every time.
Well, I think for them, I mean, if you did that every time and you're doing that many games, I don't know how many, they must have 80 to 100 games. And if you started complaining about you'd be – yeah, it'd probably get tiresome.
Yeah.
They find it new and subtle ways to complain about the umpire.
Hey, so as far as the Mariners, you know, success, we've talked about, you know, good pitching and defense will beat good hitting, and hopefully that remains true, and people are texting in. You guys can text in 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. They were one person pointing out in 1997 that the Mariners had a really good offense, but they didn't have pitching, didn't get out of the first round. Others just saying, pitching beats good offense, Mariners win. Okay, I hope all these people are right, not without question. But you look at offensively with this Mariner team, they're going to have to put up some offense here. It's not just pitching. Obviously, they're going to have to do their part. And it's so weird to be leaning on a rookie. Mm. And he doesn't seem like a rookie anymore. He's, you know, it feels like Julio's been here forever, and you just know what you're getting, and you count on him. You expect out of him. And that, to me, is a big deal when you're talking about a rookie. That speaks to how good he's been and how consistently good he's been, that you just expect that he's going to do something great. And Scott Servais talking here postgame about Julio's ability to just change the game.
What else you can say about Julio? He's a generational type player, and fortunately for us, he's going to have a Mariners uniform on for a long, long time. And fortunate for our fan base, and really the whole industry, baseball, this guy's special. We talk about it all the time. We see it here in Seattle. The whole world's about to see it on the biggest stage, and that's Major League Baseball's postseason. And no bigger personality. You know, everything he brings to the game, the ability, the personality, his joy for the game, like, he's already captivated MLB with what he did at the Home Run Derby. They're about to see the everyday player and what he can bring.
I'm glad he brought that up, because I was going to say it's a great example and kind of a nice test for him to see if it's too big of a moment for him. Mm-hmm. I don't think the playoffs will be, because he handled that so well. But then, you know, you look at since he's come back, and it was just played in three games against Detroit, hit .455. You know, one home run, two RBIs. And then, you know, like we talked about last year about Kelnick and Logan Gilbert, about how they finished in September, and both finished on the uptick. His September this year was .383 average. So, you know, and his on-base percentage, .456. I'm looking at home runs, six home runs in September. So it's all coming together for him, and it's real. This isn't a fluke. You know, we talked about the fluky offense last year. This is not a fluke. This is who Julio Rodriguez is. And I'm glad he got three games to kind of get going again, you know, because I think after the All-Star break, it took him a little while to get going, maybe two or three games, but he's ready to go, man.
Yeah, and another great stat from our guy Alex Mayer out there says Julio Rodriguez is the fourth rookie age 21 or younger with a 6.0 plus WAR, 145 OPS plus season in Major League Baseball history. So he's the fourth one to do it, 21 years of age or younger. He joins some guy named Ted Williams, another who's that guy, Albert Pujols, and somebody who's, I think we've seen a time or two, Mike Trout. That's pretty
We're
special.
Tired of seeing Mike Trout.
It's pretty special company.
Good company.
Ted Williams, Albert Pujols, and Mike Trout are the other three other ones to do that. I mean, it just blows you away. I mean, he has so far exceeded anything I could have realistically expected from him. You know, and I felt like we sort of, you know, with Kelnick the year previous, kind of it made me more cautious in terms of my expectations. Like, okay, you got to remember, you know, they're up there in the big leagues or wearing the uniform you just expect. You're like, kid's 20, Kelnick at the time, 22 when he came out. He's 22 years old. So, yeah, of course they're going to struggle. It gets sent down, comes back up. That all makes sense. So I kind of had that mindset with Julio, like, yeah, that's not going to surprise me. It's not going to bum me out. He's going to come up, probably going to scuffle, get sent back down, come back up. That just seemed the natural trajectory for a 21-year-old kid who had just turned 21. And then we fast forward here to the end of the season, and we're counting on him. Julio's back, and we feel so much better about this offense going into a postseason, into a first playoff since 2001 because of a rookie, because of a guy that's been otherworldly. I mean, it speaks to how just brilliant he's been.
Well, just like we talked about the other day, think about where he was last year at this time. You know, he didn't know. They didn't know. No. I mean, he played double-A Everett. I remember Jen Mueller going up and doing the Julio Rodriguez report, you know, just kind of checking in. Guy's putting up, you know, pretty amazing numbers for double-A, but can it go to the translate to the big leagues?
You always qualify it. Like, yeah, it's double-A. It's great. Yeah, he's wrecking them, but it's double-A. These are kids, and, you know, but, man, what a fun season it's been to watch him. All right, coming up, we just talked about him a bit, but he is absolutely one of the best around. Aaron Goldsmith is going to join us next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It is Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.